You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. Now, I'm going to give you a quick update on Marriott. If you recall, last year, Marriott had a data breach of about $500 million or so. I believe the initial count was $320 million, but I think we're up to $500 million now. They are going through a class action lawsuit. And according to law.com, and I quote, "In its motion to dismiss, Marriott insisted the breach caused no harm to its guests and attached a declaration by a former government official who wrote, 'A U.S. passport is virtually impossible to forge successfully.'" Basically, what we are talking about here with Marriott is they are trying to get their class action lawsuit dropped because they're saying the data that was exposed by them wouldn't do hackers any good, and therefore it's really irrelevant if it gets exposed out there. Hopefully they're going to lose that. I don't know what the outcome of that was yet, but that would set an absolutely horrible precedent. And even though, let's say, a passport might be a very difficult thing to spoof or forge due to all of the technology now built into a passport, we're still talking about driver's licenses, payment card information, addresses. I mean, the data breach was massive, huge, and they exfiltrated a ton of data, and Marriott absolutely needs to be held accountable for that. I hope they do not skirt this because it's simply harder to forge a passport. I think that's absolutely bogus. Moving on, we're going to be talking about the Black Flag Brewing Company. They are in New Zealand, and they have a data breach. Although this data breach is actually a beer, and this is true, they have a blackberry milkshake IPA beer called Data Breach. And if I am ever in New Zealand, I'm looking this place up and I'm having one. That is not necessarily a data breach, but it's a data breach. And I thought it would be a fun thing to include here. And now we're going to be talking about that because I'm not going to end on that note. Let's talk about Palm Bay, Florida and Ames, Iowa. Now, Palm Bay officials are advising customers who pay their utilities online to make sure that no fraudulent charges have been made after it said software used by the city was a target of a cyber attack. Ames, Iowa basically is saying the same thing for those people that went online and were paying parking tickets. But here's the thing. What they're talking about is the software that they use in common that many municipalities use, Click2Gov. Now, if you've been a longtime listener of my show, you will know that late last year, Click2Gov declared a massive data breach that affected thousands of local government municipalities, cities, counties, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They have so many clients, and overwhelmingly, basically the United States was slammed, and I believe also the UK, if I'm remembering correctly, were slammed with breach disclosures coming from many local cities, towns, et cetera, saying, hey, by the way, if you're a citizen of X town, you now got hit because you paid your parking tickets, your speeding tickets, your water bill, you know, whatever it is online. And so the question becomes, why wait this long? I mean, we know that all of this is out there. And if I'm a city official and I'm like, oh God, Click2Gov just got breached, we use Click2Gov, the very first thing I would do is start putting out breach disclosure notices to the public saying, hey, you know, it's not our fault, it's Click2Gov's fault, but heads up, you know, you are a citizen of the town that I represent. Please make sure your data is safe and secure. I understand a lot of times this, you know, requires them to have things like, you know, credit monitoring, to give you credit monitoring, but still, that is the right thing to do. I think that is absolutely just insane and ridiculous. Now, with that, let's go to the very last bit of our breaches of the week. We are going to be talking about the entire population of Ecuador. I'm not talking about like one or two citizens or a city in Ecuador, every Ecuadorian citizen. An open database on an unsecured server was housing a massive amount of personal information collected from a public sector sources by a marketing analytics company. This company is called Novastrat, and they basically had a server based in Miami that was leaking this information. Now, this leaked database was found by VPN Mentor's research team and includes records for 20 million individuals taken from Ecuadorian government registries, an automotive association called AEDE in Ecuador, the Ecuadorian National Bank, and also some other sources that are official in Ecuador as well. Some of these entries are also for deceased people. Ecuador has a population of 16.5 million people. Obviously, some of their citizens will have passed on and have records there. And here we go. This also included, interestingly enough, records for Julian Assange. Now, if you remember, Julian Assange is the founder of WikiLeaks, and he had been hiding out in Ecuador's embassy in London. So basically, he was on Ecuadorian soil while he was basically exiled to Ecuador and in the UK until he was recently removed from that embassy. He was no longer a guest by British officials. So that is crazy. Now, this open database on an unsecured server was basically just housing all of this stuff. And so what ended up happening is Ecuador arrested the general manager of Novastrat as a result of this. And now they are basically going to have to essentially unscrew themselves from literally having their entire citizens dumped. We may actually see a test case coming out of Ecuador, which is why it's the last thing on my list here for the breaches of the week. We might see a test case in turning up privacy. Now everybody, every official in Ecuador, every Ecuadorian citizen has this extreme motivation to start securing their information in a way that it's never been secured before. And so if Ecuador is smart with this, they will take their system of government and start developing privacy laws that will ensure that their citizens' data is extremely, is much more safe, let's put it that way, compared to what it was when obviously they were allowing a marketing firm to scrape such amazing amounts of detail on them. So take that for what it's worth, but hopefully Ecuador will start leading the way in breach privacy laws and get lockstep behind you know, countries like Europe, the European Union, which I know is a multiple set of countries and others. So take that for what it's worth. But those are your breaches of the week. Were you affected? You probably were. And if you were a citizen of Ecuador, you absolutely were affected. Don't think you weren't. And so there we go. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin. And this week's deep dive, we're going to be talking about social credit systems. Now, this is absolutely fascinating to me, and I've seen this actually become pervasive in the United States in ways that I don't think a lot of people really realize. When we are dealing with a lot of large corporations, I don't care if it's, you know, Google Online or your insurance company or other things like your bank, etc., these corporations and institutions are gathering an absolute ton of data on us. And now, thanks to artificial intelligence, they can start ranking and scoring these things. And so we're going to dive into this today, you know, two social credit systems. But before we get into the United States, I think we have to understand where we could possibly go with this if we really turn the authoritarianism up to 11. And of course, I'm going to be starting in China, who has basically had a social credit system in place since 2014. Now, their social credit system is basically a work in progress. This is the first thing they admit. And they are thinking that it could possibly evolve next year into a single nationwide point system for all Chinese citizens, basically akin to a financial credit score. Right now, as they've been applying this, they've been applying it in regions, in cities. China obviously is the most populous country on the planet with over 1 billion people there. And their aim, basically, is to punish people for transgressions that could be things like a membership or support for groups like the Falun Gong, which the Chinese government sees as hostile. This could be Tibetan Buddhism as well. If you fail to pay debts, that would possibly lower your social credit score. Excessive video gaming, that's one. Criticizing the government. So let's say you are saying free Tibet within China, and they are monitoring your social media, your social networks, maybe your phone as you're talking to somebody, that could be an issue as well. Not just failure to pay debts, late payments as well. Failing to sweep the sidewalk in front of your store or house, which I think is a very interesting one because obviously China is trying to really ratchet up the tidiness in their urban areas. Smoking could ding your social credit. Playing loud music on trains could ding your credit, jaywalking, and other actions deemed illegal or unacceptable by the Chinese government. I think the jaywalking one is absolutely fascinating. Having spent time in Chinese cities, I kind of feel like it's every man for themselves as they are crossing the street. I can't tell you how many times I saw cars not really obeying traffic signs and almost just hit me as I'm just assuming that, well, it says I can walk, so I can walk. No, that wasn't the case. Not at all. So, but conversely, if social credit goes down, it can also go up. And so they can reward you points for things like charitable donations or even taking one's parents to the doctors. It's showing you to be a good son or daughter, a good citizen and all of this. Now, these punishments can be harsh. And so if you start to lose social credit scores and reputations, you're failing to sweep your sidewalk or, you know, you're making late payments or not paying, or you decide, you know what, the Falun Gong's for me. Basically, they can ban you from leaving the country. They can ban you from public transportation. They can ban you from checking into hotels, basically hiring for high visibility jobs, or acceptance of your children into private schools. So in other words, if you are an individual of means, for example, and can easily afford private school for your children, if you're talking basically smack about the Chinese government, your kids are going to public school with all the rest of the peasants, if you will. It can also result in slower internet connections and social stigma in the form of registration on a public blacklist. I can't even read my own notes here, but think about that. Basically, what they're doing is they're slowing out your ability to search things, to access things, to disseminate information, possibly just simply cutting you off and all of that. This is what China is doing. This is their social credit system. And quite frankly, you have to basically be in lockstep with the government to ensure that you can use public transportation. And overwhelmingly, people use public transportation. When I was in Beijing, that was the vast majority of the people I saw heading to subways and buses and all this kind of stuff. But all of this is in the backdrop of their massive surveillance system. Now, at the foundational level, they have something called the Great Wall of China, and that is obviously an historical wall. I visited; it's absolutely beautiful, and all of that. And so, they decided to do that for the internet, and they created the Great Firewall of China, which basically has any internet service provider within Chinese borders basically have to flow through the government censorship system. So, perfect example, just from my own personal experiences there, I could not go to google.com. It was not allowed. I could go to google.cn, which is the heavily censored Chinese version of Google as supplied by Google, but they take this very seriously. In fact, when I was flying over there from the United States, once my plane got into Chinese airspace, the internet was shut off. Because basically the provider of that the airline was not Chinese based. It was wide open. I could go wherever I wanted, Facebook, Google, you name it. As soon as we hit Chinese airspace, boom, it went off. This surveillance system is founded on that ability to censor, identify, and basically look at all traffic coming in and out of this country for a billion people on the internet. And from there, they've built on top of that a massive surveillance system that ties into the internet. Cameras. They've got drones that look like actual birds. They've got artificial intelligence that has recognition for faces and for lip reading so well that they were actually able to pick out one of their most wanted criminals in a crowd of 60,000 at a concert in a major city and arrest that person simply because their cameras were so good at scanning the entire crowd. They were able to identify this individual, watch his movements, and then the police were able to grab him. That is crazy. Now, when we are looking at this too, we actually see that within the borders of China, there are minority groups that are some of the most surveilled people on the planet. The Uyghurs, for example, which is a very small enclave of Muslims that are in here, they are probably the most surveilled people on the planet. If you are crossing the border, from the from the northwest region of China into China from their northwest region, they will actually install apps on your phone to data mine you, collect everything. They were using known exploits for iPhones and Androids to basically monitor the Uyghurs' movements, communications, all this kind of stuff. This is the backdrop for their massive surveillance apparatus. So when they are applying their social credit system, which is why I'm going through this exercise, they have the ability, literally, to see and hear everything that you're doing in real time. So you post something, let's say that seems too favorable to, you know, the Free Tibet or something that is the antithesis of China, and delete it, it's still captured and they still know it. They have access to the back end of the social media platforms where they can go ahead and read information at will. Now, we know the U.S. government has that kind of access, thanks to Edward Snowden with Facebook and Google, et cetera. But the Chinese government doesn't need a warrant. They don't need legal recourse. This is what they do. And so when you're developing a social credit system for that, they are collecting that information that allows them to properly score somebody with their system. Whether you agree with it or not, this is what they're doing. And this is coming to the United States and the European Union by way of private companies. These private companies obviously could then eventually tie into the US government or the EU government. But look at this. Let's talk about this for a second. Now, One of the big sectors that is actually bringing this in is insurance. So the New York State Department of Financial Services announced earlier this year that life insurance companies can base premiums on what they find in your social media posts. In other words, in the state of New York, the insurance companies have the ability to access your social media. So for example, that Instagram pic showing you teasing a grizzly bear at Yellowstone with a martini in one hand and a bucket of cheese fries in the other and a cigarette in your mouth could actually cost you. On the other hand, if your Facebook posts are showing that you're doing yoga, that may actually save you money on health insurance. Now, insurance companies have to demonstrate that the social media evidence points to risk and not be based on any kind of discrimination. So in other words, they can't use social media posts to alter premiums based on race or disability. And so let's say you did not disclose your race, or let's say that you're in a wheelchair and they notice in your posts that you happen to be, let's say, a minority and in a wheelchair, technically they can't discriminate against you. But there's also loopholes around that, you know, in terms of, you know, how you classify information, or let's say various ranges in scoring. I don't know how New York is going to do that, but this can be used to verify your claim. So for example, let's say on your insurance form, you say, well, I don't go rock climbing and jumping out of airplanes, but your Facebook posts show you this is me scaling El Capitan on the weekends and then jumping off of it when I'm done. You know, that is going to ding you, because basically what is the insurance company going to do if they catch that after the fact? Will they not cover your claims because they said you lied to us on your insurance forms? I mean, how does this work? But this is a part of the social media scoring system, in the sense that if this is part of what it is, my insurance company can now go into my social media and see the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, and a lot of people use Facebook and other social media platforms for their personal therapy sessions. They really do. I can't tell you how many times I've heard somebody talk about just absolute horrible things that have happened to them, like cancer and miscarriages and stuff like that. That information can be scanned by your insurance company, especially if you're in New York, and I guarantee you it won't stop there, and then be used against you. Well, she didn't mention that she had miscarriages. Maybe, you know, she's got some kind of other problem that she didn't disclose, and now she's a higher risk, you know, otherwise. In the same way that, you know, let's say a guy posts, I'm having suicidal thoughts or something like that. Well, now maybe this person's a psychological risk for depression, and categorized in a way that he really shouldn't be. Who knows? But this is one of the social media scores that are coming out there. The next one that's coming is actually a little more egregious and upfront, and that's bars and restaurants. Now, there is a company called PatronScan, which is software that basically a bar can use to scan the ID to determine if it's real. So in other words, if I'm, you know, 18 trying to get into a bar with a fake ID, PatronScan will tell me that, or tell the bar that I am trying to fake my way in. But It also builds a profile of you within their system that can be shared among all the bars and restaurants that PatronScan is basically used in. Now, this company maintains a list of objectionable customers designed to protect venues from people previously removed for, quote, fighting, sexual assault, drugs, theft, and other bad behavior. This is according to their website. A public list then is shared among PatronScan customers, meaning the bars and restaurants basically have this aggregated data among them. And so basically, if somebody got banned in one bar in the United States, they could potentially be banned in a bar in the United States or even the United Kingdom that is also using PatronScan, where they're very heavily based. PatronScan is also in Australia, but apparently they haven't integrated that system yet. So here's the thing. Judgment about what kind of behavior qualifies for this is pretty much based on PatronScan, and it's up to the bar owners and managers. So an individual bar owner can, let's say, ignore the ban if they like, and basically offer that person, you know, access. Data on non-offending customers is deleted in 90 days, according to PatronScan. But also, PatronScan enables bars to keep a private list that is not shared with other bars on which bad customers can be kept. They can keep that list for up to 5 years. PatronScan says they do have an appeals process, but it's up to the company to grant or deny that appeal. They are judge, jury, and executioner. Now, imagine for a minute, let's say two people are fighting in a bar, and this is a PatronScan bar, and you intervene to try to break up the fight, to try to, you know, keep the peace, whatever. You're just trying to be the hero in this case. Maybe the bar doesn't care. Maybe they have a blanket ban for the three of you. Now, if PatronScan is being widely used, and apparently it is, and more bars and restaurants start using it, now you're flagged at a lot of other places for something that you have virtually no recourse on. You can call PatronScan and say, I wasn't involved in this fight. I was trying to break it up. The bar might disagree with you, and PatronScan at their discretion can basically say, no, you're banned from everything. They don't really classify what bad behavior is. I mean, I understand fighting. I understand sexual assault, drugs, and theft. I mean, I think all of those things warrant, something. We are also stupid when we're teenagers. Does that roll over when we're 25? If we're keeping this stuff for 5+ years, do the global bans last longer? But that's a huge thing in the sense that a bar or a restaurant that you walk into is offering you a social credit system. Now, these are private companies. They can refuse whoever they want to, you know, and so if I'm a repeat offender and I'm on their private list of, oh God, here comes Nick, he's going to start, you know, throwing glasses at the bar again or something. Okay, fine. I totally get that. You know, that's fine, but we don't have any kind of real legal recourse here, or anything like that. So I'm very curious to see where that goes, but you know, here we are with bars, and we're not even done. I mean, we can look at other companies here that are now starting to do this. Airbnb is another one. They can disable your account for life for any reason they choose, and they reserve the right to tell you basically nothing about it. They don't have to tell you what the reason is. Now, basically, the company's canned message includes the assertion that, and I quote, this decision is irreversible and affect any duplicated or future accounts. Please understand that we are not obligated to provide an explanation for the action taken against your account. Now, this ban can be based on something that basically the host privately tells Airbnb. So in other words, you're renting their place and let's say, you know, you partied like a rock star in it. Maybe they're not happy and Airbnb decides to ban you. But they basically have this policy that allows them to unilaterally do this, you know, and so I think that's interesting. And again, as a private company or organization, they have the right to refuse service to whoever they want. But when we start tying these things in, it's going to get really interesting. Uber, that's another one. It's now very easy to get banned by Uber as well. Whenever you get out of the car after an Uber ride, the app invites you to rate the driver. But what you may not know is that the driver actually also gets an invitation to rate you. Now, under this new policy that was announced in May, if your average rating is significantly below average, Uber will ban you from using their app. It's really that simple. So they're rating not just the drivers, but the passengers as well. And nobody wants to deal with a jerk, whether you're a passenger or a driver. But again, you know, here we are. So WhatsApp would be another one. And I find this one to be very interesting because this flies in the face of what WhatsApp is supposed to be, owned by Facebook. Big surprise. You can be banned from the communication app. You can. So, for example, you can be banned from WhatsApp if too many other users block you. You can also get banned for sending spam, threatening message, trying to hack or reverse engineer the WhatsApp app, which, okay, kind of makes sense, and using the service with an unauthorized app. In other words, you've got a third-party app trying to plug into it. Now, here's the thing. WhatsApp is supposed to be 100% private. That is what it was based on. That is when Facebook bought it. They said, yes, absolutely, but it's not. They're clearly data mining you in WhatsApp. If they're able to know how many people have blocked you or banned you, if they know that you're sending spam because, let's say, other people are reporting it, or they're scanning the messages before they go across the internet in an encrypted manner, your WhatsApp is insecure. Don't assume WhatsApp is private messaging, because literally they can data mine all of this from you to ban you from WhatsApp. And obviously WhatsApp is, you know, small potatoes in the United States, but in much of the world, it's the main form of electronic communication. Not being allowed to use WhatsApp in some countries is as punishing as not having a telephone in the United States. That's a huge, huge thing. And so where does this leave us? You know, as I mentioned before with a couple of these, corporations have the right to ban who they wish. But what if they start consolidating this amongst each other in the same way that PatronScan could block you from other establishments? So what if Uber, WhatsApp, PatronScan, and you know, your insurance companies all come together and create a consolidated social media score that says, oh, well, this guy clearly is, you know, fighting in bars, or we're accusing him, let's say, maybe falsely, of doing drugs in a restaurant, you know, and let's assume that is false. Your insurance company sees it and says, oh God, no, we're going to jack his rates up because now he's going to be a risk for rehab and, you know, OR visits and, you know, ER visits and all this kind of stuff. Uber's going to say, well, if the guy's doing drugs there, we're not going to have him do drugs in the car. WhatsApp is going to ban you because, well, he might be selling drugs on WhatsApp. Airbnb says absolutely not. He's going to turn a, you know, an Airbnb into a crack house. This all ties together. And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.